Welcome to Disruptive Healthcare, where innovative companies are doing cutting-edge things here in Atlanta, Georgia. I am Lee Cantor, and I'm joined with Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well. I'm jazzed. Family's starting to come in, even more of them over the weekend. Only four more sleeps till the big fat man with a long white beard comes. I'm ready to rock.
Ready to rock. So I'm excited about today's show.
This is going to be a good show. We have our good buddy Lynn Hood with Cracker Jack Marketing, who's always bringing a knowledgeable, passionate guest from the healthcare arena. And it is my distinct pleasure to introduce today, we're going to have from Global Center for Medical Innovation, Ms. Tiffany Wilson-Karp. Welcome to the show, Tiffany.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Give us a little overview, if you would, mission and purpose of your outfit.
So GCMI, we're an independent nonprofit organization. We were founded by Georgia Tech and St. Joseph's Translational Research Institute, Piedmont Healthcare, and the Georgia Research Alliance to help accelerate medical device commercialization in the Southeast.
Man, a lot of IQ points for these folks you hang out with.
It's amazing, isn't it? I feel smarter just being around them.
Now, how did those disparate groups decide to work together? How did that happen?
Started at Georgia Tech. Wayne Hodges, who has spent his entire career really focused on commercialization and entrepreneurship with Georgia Tech Technologies, really saw a gap in the market where there's a lot of innovation in the Southeast region in the academic research centers and hospitals. There should be a larger med tech industry here. So looking at why that's not happening, someone comes up with an idea, they don't know where to go, so they would end up in California,
so they take it elsewhere.
Minnesota, and Massachusetts. There are large groups of investors there, and they don't come back. So if we built a place where people could come and have the expertise and kind of tap into the ecosystem that we do have, we thought, Wayne thought
then
they'd stay.
Now, Wayne is also one of the founders of all sorts of
ATDC.
ATDC,
oh, really?
One of our
Yeah.
So he's had a finger in a lot of this. And one of the things GCMI does is it fills a gap in the development level. So you have early stage universities, and we have tremendous universities here with Georgia Tech, Georgia State, University of Georgia, and then, of course, Emory University. So you have these very talented people coming up with ideas. Mm-hmm. But there was a gap, so they had these ideas and they didn't know where to take them.
Right.
And so that's where GCM, and then we have people further along that can help them market them and take them to market and commercialize. But there was an area in there where there was not a single source, and not just for the state of Georgia, but really for the entire Southeast.
I got to believe getting a medical device company off the ground is probably a bit more complex than, say, getting a radio network off the ground. There's probably some regulation involved. Can you speak to some of those complexities?
Yeah. So, it's very expensive, starting it with intellectual property and just, once you've got an idea and covering the patents and then going through the regulatory process and the testing that's involved and the time it takes to do that testing and get through FDA, it's all very expensive. You got to raise a lot of money to do it. So there's the challenge of having FDA sign off on all your tests, but then, finding sources of funding to
right.
pay for it.
Now, do the ideas typically bubble up from the universities, or they bubble up from the from companies?
They come from the universities. They come from clinicians who see unmet needs
right.
when they're treating patients. And then as companies are founded, there's follow-on products and other opportunities
Can you kind of walk us through what somebody that maybe have gone through the process or that you've seen go through the process, like where the idea germinated and then how it progressed?
Yeah, so I actually got involved with the medical device industry about 11 years ago. And I was an investment banker in Washington, D.C., and there was a retired general surgeon from Harvard who had been fooling around with tissue engineering his whole career. He partnered up with a engineer, biomedical researcher at Purdue.
So he had an idea. So he's doing
his
job just every day, and he's got something.
Yeah,
that's
he retired,
him,
and he's
right?
like, I really like this area of regenerative medicine. I'm
right.
going to learn more about it. So he had an invention. patented it, went out to look for funding for it, and that's where I got involved. So I was working at a firm. We raised the Series A.
So he comes to your firm mm-hmm. with an idea. And
it's like, I need to, here's my business plan. I need to raise $6 right. million. Dollars
Which to, you probably see lots of ideas.
To take right? it to the next level.
So something about this idea was, you said, we're going to pursue this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so we spent 6.5 years, I spent 6.5 years with that company, taking it from a point where it was really just animal studies, all the way through FDA to first in market. And we had a team of about 10 people, business people and scientists, all working together and coordinating to get that to into patients.
Now, but when you're going through that idea, at any point, the government can say, no, this is not working, or the trial shows something not mm-hmm. good, and then...
Yeah, you could spend, $5 million, and FDA would say, maybe not so much.
And then that's just, you're done.
And
it's
then
over,
you're done, yeah.
And then that investment's gone.
Yep.
So it's that kind of Las Vegas-like risk reward.
It is, but it's a process, and there's lots of go, no-go decisions
right.
along the way. You just have to have smart people surrounded.
Right. But that's still no guarantee of it working.
There are no guarantees in medical right. devices.
So, Tiff, this company you were talking about with the regenerative tissues, can you tell us what the benefit was to the patient with that?
So this tissue had the ability to remodel damaged or diseased tissue anywhere you put it in the body. So, diabetic foot ulcers that don't heal, you had the ability to place that and regrow skin.
And it's artificial tissue?
No, it came from the pig's bladder.
Okay, so that's hugely helpful for the patient.
For the patient, yeah. And you could use it for abdominal wall repair. We did pericardial patches.
Wow.
Dura mater, esophageal repair.
But every time you went to a different area, you have to get testing and
yes.
proof that each
mm-hmm.
area works.
Yes.
Even though it might work in one place, it may not work somewhere else.
Yes.
Wow.
Is there a focus area right now, like several companies or individuals all trying to solve a common problem, some medical problem, and is there some sort of race toward that, or you got people just doing all kind of crazy stuff?
I'm seeing people do all kinds of stuff. I think orthopedics and cardiovascular devices are still big areas, but the range of stuff that we're seeing in the center right now ranges from home health care tools to health IT initiatives and into orthopedics and cardiovascular spine implants.
And the center itself, it's a physical location with virtual arms to support it. So talk about that.
It is. So we've got 12,000 square feet.
Oh, wow.
In Midtown Atlanta. We've got two class 10,000 clean rooms, which are where implantable medical devices would be manufactured. One class 100,000 for assembly, a full machine shop, rapid prototyping capabilities. And so that's within our center. And then we've been building this network, this virtual network, where I've been trying to connect with all of the intellectual property attorneys, regulatory reimbursement, specific types of engineers, all the way through to investors and industry, where someone comes in and they have a problem, and I can pull a team together from across the city or region to help bring this product to market.
So you're incubating companies there?
We weren't founded to do that, but I'm seeing a tremendous need for incubation. And so we are working with a company right now who lives in our space. They moved in July. They're making craniofacial implants.
Because you got all the good toys, right?
Yeah.
So they want to play over there.
They do. It's a really neat place to be. And so we're excited. They just got their CE mark, which is what you need to sell in Europe. Mm-hmm. So they're going to launch in Europe first, which is a typical pathway for U.S. medical device companies these days, because it's a lot easier to get into the European market than it is the U.S.
So devices typically innovate in America and then they test in Europe?
They launch in Europe, but because it's easier it's easier to get through from a regulatory standpoint.
Right. From time standpoint or just in general?
From time and in general.
Right. And I'll tell you, the company is Matrix Surgical USA. put out a press release form yesterday about the CE mark and their ISO certification, and they filed for their FDA 510K, so they will be available here in the U.S. And John O'Shaughnessy, the president of the company, has promised that he'll come on with us next year.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's a really neat company.
So how does the funding work? What keeps you guys up and running? Is it organizations paying fees to be in this? Or that, how does that work?
Yeah, so the business model is a fee-for-service business. Our goal is to keep our lights on and keep being able to provide services and education and those capabilities. We were initially founded by the funded by the Department of Commerce. We won what's called an I-6 Challenge Grant, which focuses on new ways to commercialize technology and promoting entrepreneurship. So that, with another grant from the Georgia Research Alliance and the Economic Development Agency, enabled us to build and launch the center. And then on an ongoing basis, we'll be fee-for-service and looking for additional grant monies and donations so we can continue to evolve and provide new programs and services to the community.
How has it been for you personally to make that pivot from investment banking to kind of running this?
Well, I was really looking at that point to get out of professional services. I wanted the operating company experience. So medical devices, you know, ended up being really neat. Going into undergrad, I wanted to be a doctor, and I chickened out. And business was a, you know, a good, safe platform to make a living. That was, and so I found myself all of a sudden getting to interact with clinicians and be, look at surgery and read journal articles. And it was this intersection of medicine and business that was just really exciting. The whole startup world of getting to build something was also really exciting. So that's kind of how that evolved. It's been interesting to shift into this nonprofit world. And initially when I got involved with GCMI, I thought it would be an interesting way to look at new technologies that I could take and fund and start companies. But I've really fallen in love with this intersection of economic development and academics and medicine and business and just connecting people and coordinating these efforts. It's really been a lot of fun.
Oh, are you seeing a lot of collaboration? Are people open to helping each other?
Or is they are. And I think historically we haven't seen that. I've spent a lot of time in Tennessee working with economic development and healthcare systems in Tennessee, in Birmingham, down in Gainesville and Tampa, and really just trying to get the message out. And I think historically these cities and states have been very focused on themselves. And people are realizing now, particularly with medical technology, no one's going to really get there in this region on their own. I think it's going to take a lot of collaboration across states and across cities. And I'm seeing people embrace that idea.
Now, what are some ways that you do collaborate across state lines?
So back to the Tennessee, you know, I've been working with a healthcare system there, the state of Tennessee, and a local chamber of commerce about looking at how we facilitate innovation in that community. And so really bringing together the ecosystem across the state of Tennessee to help identify unmet clinical needs in the hospital system there, we can help develop them, prototype them at GCMI. And then have them go back to Tennessee to to start companies and really build that. But there really is a lack of this, you know, as Lynn talked about before, the infrastructure, that prototyping and GMP manufacturing on a small scale element to get things to market in this region.
So, Lynn, the gizmo's got to work, and it's got to work in such a way that it doesn't cause you more harm than whatever's ailing you in the first place.
That's a good thing.
So you got that happening, but then there's also the marketing side of this thing. You also got to get the old guy that's starting to break apart, like me, to know that the gizmo's out there so I can go get it. So talk about the marketing a little bit in this world.
So the marketing in this, it's not that you would go get it because none of these things are sold over the counter. Your doctor needs to know about it. And so there's a very specialized – and what happens generally with these kind of devices is that they get it to a certain point and it becomes very cost prohibitive to go out and try and sell it directly to doctors. It's not the kind of thing where you can put it in your trunk and go driving around from practice to practice to show it to people. You really want to, at some point, get together and work with a company that has distribution. So either an independent distributor or else is part of someone big like an Abbott or a Cardinal that takes your product on and goes out and they'll license it from you and sell it for you. Mm-hmm. So it gets out. So you kind of, so even at the beginning stage, you want to get this information out, and it has to be clinically valid. This isn't one of those things you can say, hey, we're real cool and we'll save your life.
Because the FDA, take our word for it.
FDA doesn't like that.
The FDA will slap you down. Yeah. It ain't going to happen. So you've got to be very careful with what you say. All this stuff has to be very proven because we're talking about people's lives here.
Yeah.
That's why this is such a long and extensive process,
right,
to go through. So from a marketing standpoint, first of all, you want to bring it to the attention of these investors and these company people. Then you're going to do the support to sell it out, and you want the doctors to know about it. And the final step is if you can go out and sell it to the general public, but very few advances end up going out to the public. We see that with pharmaceutical companies, and they spend, I don't know how many millions, hundreds of millions of dollars advertising this. So if you're selling a popular drug that helps with a disease and you want people to come ask your doctor, you're talking about a major, major advertising program. Generally, what you try and do is have your doctor go, I like that. That would work well for my patient. Let me put that knee inside of you or whatever you're doing. So, yeah, there's a combination of marketing, and it's a very specific type of marketing you do with something like this where you have to be you have to keep your FDA regulations in mind, and you're very guarded with what you can say and something like that. There's usually someone going along going, nope.
A lot of no's.
A lot of no's.
Now,
very few yeses.
Tiffany was mentioning that the strategy sometimes starts in Europe first. Does the marketing start in Europe as well?
Well, so this is from a sales standpoint.
Right.
You would go sell it. So let's take the example that we have of the company that's working out of her office space working over at GCMI. Matrix Surgical is going to be selling there to have relationships with distributors and sellers throughout the world. So now they have a CE mark. This shows to anyone that recognizes this, which I forget how many companies that is, but at least a few dozen countries.
Right.
And so they can go ahead. It shows that it's been through the approval process. Everything's okay. They know it's clean. They know it's manufactured the way it should be. And now they can sell it over there. So that was a shorter process, a shorter what we call time to market, mm-hmm, for them to be able to do to use that international pathway. And then they'll do the same thing in the U.S.
So from you as a marketer, are you going to Europe and helping them market there?
We will not do any advertising in Europe, but we'll do direct mail to the distributors that they
right.
know, and then their distributors will push it out. So we go, it's a very much of a channel kind of thing. Very rarely in this kind of marketing do you ever do a billboard.
No.
You just, there's not a lot of billboards up there unless it's, well, the vasectomy ones I see around.
And in vitro. I've seen some in vitro.
The in vitro. Mm-hmm. And then you see the hospitals. But
right.
very few. There's a few of the knees, replacement knees now, where they've gone direct to the public. And
so
everybody in the medical device.
People want to brand it like a Nike knee.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. And so and people kind of like, the industry's kind of like, we don't,
know
if we want to do that. Exactly. Because maybe it's not the best choice
right.
for you. So you rely a lot on the doctor to
right.
do that. But the marketing to me is a interesting part of it, but it comes really at the tail end. And
right.
the things that Tiffany's doing with the with GCMI at the front is where a lot of the excitement takes place. A lot of the trial and error, which is why having this prototyping equipment, because they
that's
have a
huge
room.
No, that's
with all sorts of cool
that
stuff.
That sounds like a game changer to have that at your disposal that people can have access to.
It is.
I mean, because they couldn't afford to build it themselves.
No.
Would you talk about the 3D printer? Because I know people are like, this is just the coolest thing ever. It will change the world.
It's really cool. It's an additive manufacturing process. You know, 3D printers have really come down in price. Ours was not a cheap one. It was a very expensive one, very high resolution. We can do very small things on, you know, little tiny needles and things like that. So it is a machine, and there's a cart that rolls in, and it's got a pot of resin in it, liquid.
Right.
And so our designer will model something out in SolidWorks,
right.
program it in the machine, and press the button, and it cures it with a little laser, a fraction of a hair at a time, to build it up.
models it. When you say SolidWorks, this is a piece of software in a computer?
SolidWorks is, but then you take that and you print it in a 3D model.
And you put it on layer by layer. You can put holes in this thing. You can do it. You know, you see those carved balls inside of a ball inside of a ball.
It prints it like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we use a very basic kind of plastic right now. So if you wanted to take something in the OR and just kind of see how it looked, or wanted to print something to show an investor, we'd be able to do that there.
So it's called printing, but it's manufacturing something.
It is.
But it is printing,
like, kind of like a laser printer.
It's a 3D. It's an object. It's not a paper.
Right. It's an object. So think about putting a layer of ink on a piece of paper, and then again and again and again and again.
Right.
And it just builds up gradually and does that.
And then it becomes an object.
And it becomes an object that way.
And how long does it take? A long time to do something?
Yeah. So rapid prototyping is kind of a misnomer.
It's all relative.
Right. So it depends on the size of the part. I mean,
it could be a day. Oh, wow.
It could be a day. It could be a couple hours.
Right.
And by the way, SolidWorks software is a CAD/CAM software that originated over in Intergraph in Huntsville, Alabama. And I know this because my brother-in-law and my sister have both worked on this before in the computer business. And I did years ago, we had a big SolidWorks show here in Atlanta, a user conference. We had about 500-600 people in for that. So I happen to know that. I got this weird little
the Southeast. It's a place to happen.
Yeah. And it's now owned by Siemens.
Okay.
So I'm just thinking, you know, maybe in downtime, there probably is no downtime at this facility, but maybe you could make customized bobbleheads, right? You could just, like, create.
I think you can make anything, right? 3D.
You create anything. You take a picture of Lee, make him 3D, make a bobblehead of him overnight.
If the price is right, I'm sure they'll make anything.
So there's a lot of resources and intellect that you've got to assemble to pull this thing off, and you guys are doing a fantastic job of supplying a great deal of that. I would think you don't get very far down this road without some Cracker Jack, not just marketing, but legal support. You got to get the legal guys involved pretty quickly. Are there law firms that kind of specialize in this area and hang out with the same crowd?
Yeah, there are law firms that just focus on intellectual property.
Right.
But most law firms have an intellectual property arm, and some are very well, you know, connected to the life sciences industry.
Right.
Some are very focused on working with small businesses where we could bring in, you know, an IP expert, someone on the corporate side who would have connections with investors or advise on exit, and just general startup business services.
Because that's not something you wait till the last minute to get involved.
No, IP guys get involved really early.
Yeah. Really early, because you got to protect what you have. So we talked last week, we had Ashley Hancock in from SMDA, the Southeastern Medical Device Association.
Right.
Of course, Tiffany is very involved with the organization. We overlay in a lot of the same areas.
Right.
And, you know, SMDA feels like what GCMI is doing perfectly fits in with our goal of raising the profile and the productivity and the innovation coming out of the Southeast. So with GCMI, it's just one of our key things that we have in this area. And we're very fortunate they're here in Atlanta instead of one of the other southern states.
Absolutely.
And then what are the challenges right now? What do you need more of?
Money.
Money? Always money?
Money, yeah.
So you need, part of your job is fundraising?
Yeah, right now I've kind of got a lot of different hats on, and so I'm doing everything except for actually designing and prototyping.
Right.
We just brought on a new industrial designer who's awesome.
Do you get to wear those clothes and go in that room?
I got trained yesterday.
So you did get to wear the clothes?
Not yet, but I will soon in the next week be an expert on clean room particulate counting.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I've been trained on our clean room procedures at this point.
Oh, well, your kids got to be loving this.
They love it. They love it. They're always – my daughter drew something the other day. She wanted Mark to print on the 3D printer. It's a very complex design. I asked her if she had a few hundred dollars to pay for it. Them. Yeah.
So now when you're fundraising, is it you're going to individuals or companies, or is it a government grants, or where does it come from?
Well, where we focused right now are really on, bringing other partners on board. Mm-hmm. So large healthcare systems and additional universities throughout the Southeast region. And there's a fee for that. We take a large chunk of that money and put it directly into prototyping projects, commercialization projects for those institutions. So there is kind of a tremendous value in that.
And the university systems, are they all on board, or just Georgia Tech?
They're getting there.
You got to work that avenue as well,
We're working on it, yeah. Federal grants will be an ongoing thing. I'm in the process right now of looking for other grants that we could bring on to offer other services around workforce development, educational programs, and that sort of thing. And then, we will start going to high net worth individuals and companies and developing platforms for investing on that front.
Now, since this is a global initiative, are there people from other countries want to get involved with this?
They do. And the most recent one is we just signed a memorandum of understanding with a group in Ireland. We'll be announcing that formally next year. But it's a consortium of universities in Ireland.
Right.
Ireland's a big med tech area. The country's made a lot of investment in med tech resources, but again, there's not the early commercialization assistance there. So the idea is that we would work with their researchers to help them develop and prototype ideas, and then use Atlanta as a platform for U.S. launch. Mm-hmm. Likewise, for our companies that we're working with who want to get into Europe, kind of tap into that network and use Ireland as a base for European launch. So we'll see how that goes, but we'll kind of figure that as we go along. We know there's something there.
Well, and it's Atlanta with its tremendous airport and our facilities for travel makes an ideal spot for you to be able to jump off from here over to Europe into other parts of the world, or for them to come in and enter the U.S. from this part of
it's pretty easy
of the country. Yeah, so that helps boost our economic development efforts.
And you still have capacity for additional fee-for-service funding as well, right?
Yes.
You've got room for that as well.
Yeah, we do. So right now, the team is Mark McJunkin and me, and we have him just about booked up through probably February. So I need to look at quickly bringing on additional resources, and I'm interviewing a new engineer this afternoon and, see how we scale it quickly.
Now, how many medical device companies are there in the region? Do you have an idea?
Well, we just did that study.
We did just do a study. What was our total that we figured out on that?
300.
So several hundred?
In Georgia.
Oh, that's just Georgia?
In Georgia. 300 in Georgia. And I think we figured up, I think I saw a 2,000 number, but I may just be making that up.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about medical device companies is, a catheter is a medical device.
Right.
Technically a toothbrush is a medical device. So having to go through all of the codes and categories. And kind of peel out, okay, what are we defining as a medical device?
People that make dental implants. Yeah. Those labs are actually, they classify as a medical device. So
regulated by FDA.
Yeah, so when we start, we want to make these claims out there, and we don't want to do anything that's just ridiculous, that somebody looks at it and goes, yeah, ABC, dental? Not so much. So we're really trying to categorize that, and that's something the Metro Atlanta Chamber's been doing for some time, trying to get these down. And we came up with a really strong number of 300 when we crossed out, I think our initial list was probably 1,000. And you could go through and go, nah. And some of the lab testing places. And so when we got it down, we had a really strong concentration. But these companies can start small. It's not like a drug company. A pharmaceutical company requires, just by its nature, a very substantial investment up front and a much longer time to market. Medical devices, despite how difficult it is with all these steps, are actually a much more nimble, much faster to market product. And that's one reason I think they've been very popular and successful here in the Southeast.
Now, but part of your challenge, though, is to get the word out that this even exists to all the companies in the region, right, so that they know that this is available to them.
Yeah, that's one of the things we've been working on. So right. I've really been focused on just given our limited resources on connecting with economic development folks, hospitals, universities, and really trying to make a large impact there.
Right.
You've spent a lot of time on the road this year, haven't you?
I've spent a lot of time on the road.
A lot of conferences and a lot of meetings.
I was very excited when my last trip was November 29th.
And so that was it.
And that was it. Year. That was it. And I've since moved into more of an operational role,
right?
Along with the business development stuff. So I'm spending a lot of time right now with my head down in my office, learning regulations and putting quality systems together and finance and accounting policies. And just
counting particles.
And counting particles. That will be the latest one. That'll be my new skill.
Certainly hard work, but what an incredibly rewarding career this must be for you.
It is. It is. I've really, when I was with ACEL and got involved and saw regenerative medicine and that whole field was relatively new, and just the animal results that we were seeing were tremendous, and, you know, the thought was, we're going to make a lot of money. And then as that evolved and we had so many challenges with fundraising and, you know, the patent infringement suits and, you know, which we all ultimately prevailed, but it as an organization evolved from we're going to make a lot of money to we have to get this into patients because it's going to make such a tremendous difference right. in their life. So it's this whole aspect of improving patient lives, which is, you know, so incredibly rewarding.
Right.
And getting at this point to interact with so many different surgeons, clinicians, researchers at Georgia Tech who are dedicating their lives to helping others, you know, that takes precedence over anything at this point.
Right. The passion must be off the charts and the highs and lows of this must be
it is.
Crazy too.
It is. You get very personally invested in every
right.
part
like
of
it. You see something that's so valuable and working so well and you know you're – you know, over the moon, and then some hurdle comes in front of you. You're like, "What? Why are we?" You know,
yeah. And it's
stop.
Usually in you know capital lack mm-hmm. or lack thereof, some regulatory challenge, or you know with healthcare reform, CMS payment
right.
challenge.
Wow. So well, it's great that you guys are here. And if somebody wants to learn more, is there a website?
www.devices.net.
Devices.net.
They got in early on that. Didn't
that's
I'm
nice.
Surprised you got it. That's fantastic.
It's a great one. It's a really yeah. great one.
Yeah.
And there, I will say modestly that there's a great website there.
There
yeah.
is. Thanks yeah. to Cracker Jack Marketing.
Yeah,
all
right. But it's but you're right. This what a great resource and a tremendous leader that we have here with TIFCARP.
Thanks.
All right. Well, that ends another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week.